I'm David Schreiner Kahn, and this is Smashing the Plateau. Over the course of our journey together, you've listened to more than 150 interviews where I've asked experts how they've smashed their roadblocks and achieved their goals. They certainly delivered with their answers. We've learned something new and profound from each and every guest, which is why I thought it was high time to put together a best of episode where we hear the most informative and illuminating segments from all of our past interviews. Sit back and enjoy.
Hey everyone, my name is Nick Parks and I'll be your host. Today we're going to focus on some highlights from David Schreiner Kahn's 150 plus interviews. Let's start with personal life coach Alexander Hamilton Dunlop. With his background as a successful entrepreneur, being trained as a Roman Catholic priest, living in India, and being a Wall Street consultant after graduating from Harvard, he certainly has an interesting perspective. Listen as he talks about the difficulty he has in taking care of himself as an entrepreneur. I'm sure a lot of our listeners will be able to relate.
I mean, if I'm going to speak personally, what's one of the hardest things for me, it really is taking good care of myself, making sure I get to bed early, making sure I eat well, exercise, go for a walk, take breaks. That for me has been a foundational point of my own nutrition, my own well-being, because I'm not much good to anyone if I'm not really solidly rooted in my own health and well-being. That's a big challenge for me, and I know it's true in general for business leaders. One of my biggest challenges was getting my own clarity. You know, as I've done many different things in my life and tried many different routes and jobs and career potentials, and so having the clarity that I found from the same deck of cards, because when I found it, I was clear, oh, this is what I'm here to do. Let me start a professional practice to do exactly what's outlined for me in my cards to play. So it gave me clarity as well to then start doing what I love to do. So those are two big challenges for me, is my own health and well-being and my own clarity. Mm-hmm. And then I suppose, too, it's also personal growth. For me, again, it's about my own ongoing evolution and growth and development, to put myself in a place where I can offer something back to my clients. I find that as my business grows, I'm taking on higher and higher level clients, and people climb to the top of their field because they have a degree, in my experience, in my opinion, they have a degree of potency and power and inner drive and authority. That if I want to match that, and if I want to be at that level, then it's about my own personal growth and personal development as well.
Our next clip is from Tracy Dennis. As a professor at Hunter's College Department of Psychology and the developer behind the app Personal Zen, she knows a thing or two about turning stressful days into positive experiences. As entrepreneurs, we know a lot of things can, and do, go wrong. Listen as she explains how we can avoid dwelling on what can go wrong, and how we can take action that will lead to positive results.
There's so much out there, and it's a lot of it is, you know, sort of becoming more and more part of the common dialogue. But there are a couple things that I like to focus on. One is plugging my app, but you can download Personal Zen for free from the App Store. And what that actually does is it retrains your attention to disengage from the negative and focus on more positive information. But you don't need an app to do that. One thing that that has been shown to actually help reduce sort of ruminating on negative things that you experience during the day is a simple thing, a simple sort of day in review that you can do at the end of every day. I actually do this with my children every day at the end of the day. We simply talk about three interesting, exciting, wonderful, whatever adjective you like, things that happened in their day. And we talk about what happened, why it happened, who it happened to. We just elaborate on it a little bit. And what this actually does is it allows you to sift through a whole lot of information over the course of this whole day you experienced and pick out the positive. And you elaborate on it, so you create more complex mental structures around these positive things that happened. And if you do that day after day, it becomes a habit of mind. It becomes a habit of how you think about your day. You always pick out the positive from something that has happened to you. So that's a simple technique. You know, other techniques are simply being aware that you might have this tendency to focus on negative information. And so you could play a game with yourself during the day that in a given situation that's very stressful, you can sort of take a step back and say, ah, in this situation, I could focus on these three negative things, but let me pick out three positive things that I could take away from this situation in the moment. And again, if you do that, situation after situation, challenge after challenge, it becomes a habit.
Lisa Kron knows a lot about story. She's a producer for shows on Showtime and Court TV, a consultant for Warner Brothers, an instructor at UCLA's Extension Writers Program, and the author of Wired for Story. There's a lot of talk today about using storytelling in business. We'll listen as she explains where story has impacted culture in a positive way, especially in the corporate world.
There was a study that was done in 2010 out of the Ohio State University, and it was in part to see what would have a greater effect on college-age women's use of birth control. Would it be a new style documentary about the horrors of teen pregnancy, or would it be an episode of a nighttime, very popular teen TV show, teen soap opera? So they made this documentary, and it was really well done. It had great production values. It had a lot of really scary facts and really scary figures and all the awful things that were going to happen to you between, you know, when you had the baby and when you died, and P.S., you died sooner. They had teen moms and dads talking about how their lives had just been upended once they became parents. The other group watched an episode of the popular nighttime TV show, The OC, in which two of the main characters, high school seniors Ryan and Teresa, were actually grappling with the, you know, the gut-wrenching, heartbreaking consequences of an unintended pregnancy. There were no facts, there were no figures, there was no data. It was just that moment when you wake up and your life turns upside down. And, you know where this is going. The women who watched the documentary, their behavior didn't change. I mean, they could look at those, the teen moms and dads, and go, oh, those idiots, that happened to them. That would never happen to me. Because again, what happens when somebody tries to tell you, I mean, think about your own life. When someone tries to tell you that what you're doing is wrong, you know, up comes that analytic brain and it just shuts down 100%. In fact, I always think when someone comes to you and says, we have to talk, you think, okay, yeah, but not today. Because I'm already not listening to you because I'm already being very defensive. Women who watched the news, the episode of The OC, going through that experience in the virtual world, the last thing they wanted to do was go through it in the real world, and their behavior changed. And when you think about it, what was the entire reason for being for that news documentary? It had one reason and one reason only, and that was to change behavior, and it didn't. And what was the goal of the TV show? You know, to be entertaining. And that's what changed behavior, because there's no such thing as mindless entertainment. You know, stories change us every minute of every day, whether we know it or not. And the scary thing is, most of the time, we don't know it at all, that we're being affected that way. That's why it's so important to really understand both the power of story, and that story, again, translates facts into emotion so that we can't ignore it. We really have to pay attention. You can't decide not to be. There's that old saying, you know, that get lost in a good story is a willing suspension of disbelief. It couldn't be less true, because we don't have the power to decide not to. When a story grabs you, you know, you're under its spell. I mean, watch. I say this often, not just with little kids, but in business. Watch what happens when you say to people, let me tell you a story. It's like their body language changes. They lean forward, you know. What's really happening at that moment is the dopamine, the pleasure center is surging, and it's saying to that analytic brain, you know, shut up, shut up, shut up, don't talk. A story is going to happen here. It's going to make me feel good. Let me enjoy the story. So we really are pretty helpless when a story grabs us, and the reason is because stories are how we mainline meaning, which is what evolutionary biologists have looked at and got, okay, since we really do go offline when we're lost in a story, you know, what is the biological benefit of that? Because, you know, right now the worst thing that happens is, you know, you stay up reading all night and you're exhausted the next day. But, you know, back in the day when you're sitting around the campfire, you know, a lion could lunge at you, someone could clobber you from behind. I mean, being offline really could have a very definite detrimental effect on you. And the feeling is because it was what allowed us to really experience things we haven't experienced before, to figure out, okay, what would I do if I was in that situation? Which is, again, coming back to business, is exactly what you want to do. You want to envision that person, whether it's someone working for you or someone who you want, you know, to sell something to or to believe something, to say, okay, if you're in that position to either buy my product or change this company, I want you to feel this. I want you to do this. But of course, if you tell them to do it, like the women who watched that documentary, you know, tell you what to do in terms of birth control, you're going to go, yeah, I'm not listening to you. But if you make them feel how it would affect them, now you got them on their on your page, and you haven't told them to do it. In fact, they think it's their idea, and now they're going out and telling other people. I mean, that's the best kind of going viral, I think.
Tim Fargo is an author, angel investor, and entrepreneur who donated blood to raise money to start his business, which he sold in 2003 for $20 million. He's currently bootstrapping his tech startup, Tweet Jukebox.
Well, and I find it fascinating how, as an example, I mean, you know, how many restaurants there are that, you know, they'll get, and I'm not saying, I mean, I know that people care about decor and things like that, but I lived in South Beach for a while, and you'd see people like do these million-dollar build-outs, but the menu would be completely screwed up. They'd have no organization in the kitchen, et cetera, et cetera. You know, and I mean, halogen lamps and all that stuff's really nifty, but getting good food on the plate in a timely manner, you know, people would probably put up with ordinary lights if the food, you know, it's like focus on the stuff that matters, too. I mean, execute and execute on the things that actually are drivers of the bringing the person back, the consumer back, for additional sales. So that, you know, I mean, and people might love a nice restaurant in terms of the decor, but I think the service and the food tend to kind of overwhelm those other things. People are pretty forgiving, at least in my experience, when, you know, the quality's off the charts in the other area. I mean, you know what I mean? You can easily execute on something that's not a key element that the consumer doesn't care about. You know, and you have this beautiful restaurant, but if people are waiting 2 hours for their food and then it doesn't taste great, so what?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So you do have to be totally in touch with what your customers want.
Well, and I think it requires a great deal of paying attention to what's going on, and also just taking the time to understand what's going to matter to the person. And I actually used to use the example of when talking about this kind of thing. If McDonald's, who I know is kind of like the poster child for everyone's anger sometimes, but whatever, they provide a service, they've been around for a long time, clearly they're doing something right. If they started grinding up filet mignon to make their burgers, it wouldn't increase sales. It's not what people don't go there for that. I mean, it would be a really interesting thing, and I mean, maybe if they marketed it and they could get the margins out of it, but it's so completely outside the scope of what the average person who goes to that restaurant thinks about. So it would be execution on something that's just not a key driver of their average client. So it'd just be wasted money.
Our next clip comes from Kaylin Amadio, CEO of a digital marketing company that helps baby boomers flourish. She's also an author, speaker, and engineer. She definitely has an insider's knowledge when she talks about some of the differences between digital marketing and brick and mortar marketing. Listen as she talks about a mistake baby boomers often make.
I think sometimes one of the mistakes that boomers will often make when it comes to using social media, let's say, or any kind of digital communication, but especially social media in marketing their business, is think about it. Marketing was often synonymous with advertising. So, you know, Mad Men, you know, very popular show. We often use the terms interchangeably, but they're not the same thing. So when older business owners saw that social media was available to them, they thought, great, free advertising. And that's not what it is.
And when your audience starts to get what you're talking about, what are some of the aha moments that you see?
Some of the aha moments. Oh, that's a good question. I'm sure there's all kinds of them across the board. And let me just say, this is what just popped in my mind. Even when they have the aha moments, the thing that immediately follows on the heels of that is the fright and the wariness of the technology. So even if they start to see, ooh, I could really use Facebook, and now I get it. These are the people who are on Facebook, and here's what they look like as individual people, and I need to be speaking to them, and here's how I'm going to speak to them, and here's what the etiquette is like, and here's how the language is spoken when I'm there. But then they still get caught up in that rut of, I don't understand the technology. This is very overwhelming. There's so many things. How can I possibly manage my time? And, you know, there's still a lot of fear involved even after the aha moment. And some people, you know, like to jump in the deep end and learn how to swim. And other people don't. You know, they want to try and make everything perfect before they'll even stick their toe in the water. So those aha moments usually have to do with flipping that switch in your brain that all of this technology-driven communication is really still just communication. In the end, on Facebook, it's one human being talking to one other human being. No matter how many pieces of technology come between us along the way, we're still just having a conversation.
So talk to me a little bit about the one-to-one aspect of it, because how does that translate when you're posting messages that lots and lots of people see?
Right. So you have to think about it, even though you might post a message and 10,000 people see it. So in your head, you might be saying, I'm one person talking to 10,000. You're better off approaching it as, I'm one person and I'm talking to one other person. And that's the way you craft your message. And that's the way you speak. That's the way your voice should be heard. Because each one of those individual 10,000 people, see, the thing about the internet is that it's allowing you to scale that one-on-one conversation. So I've just scaled my one-to-one conversation to 1 to 10,000, but I'm still just having one conversation at a time.
Our next clip comes from Jason Troy, a leading expert on social engineering, influence persuasion, and networking. He's the author of the best-selling book, Social Wealth. Listen as he talks about some of the traits that can develop relationships with people you meet fairly quickly.
Well, one thing is I try to think about, what do people do that are in other people's inner circle? And I try in my head to think about, how can I do more of those things that I'm currently doing? And so one easy thing to do is actually just listen. It's amazing how many times when I go out and I just watch people, because sometimes I do just to see what people are doing, how many people are completely distracted. They're not even giving any eye contact. They're not engaged with the person in front of them. They're not being an active listener. I see this happening all the time. And the reality is, if you break it down, is, you know, like physics, you can only be in one place at one time. You can't be in two places. So when you start to look around and get distracted and you're not present and you're thinking about what you have to do tomorrow, you're signaling to the other person you just don't care. And that's the easiest way to get someone turned off. You know, the next thing is, you've got to tap into someone's emotions, because, again, that's what matters. And you've got to get to what matters to them. So instead of asking the interview type questions people do, and this is whether it's personally or professionally, you know, I tell my clients to ask one easy question, which is, what are you passionate about? What projects are you working on that you're passionate about right now? Because that gets into the core of what really matters to someone. And then you can ask them questions on top of that about, what challenges are you having with those passions? Or you'll figure them out, because the person will tell you. And then you can offer to try to help them. You can help them, maybe even suggesting a book, a resource, a contact, really anything. Because if you do that before you ask for anything else, you're making a deposit in the relationship bank account. And the only people that do that are people in someone's inner circle. Those people don't keep a scorecard with someone else. And so people then they automatically think about you in that place unconsciously, even if you don't even know that person at all, because you've shown them that they're a giver. And that helps you even more when you're dealing with more influential people, because they're used to people taking even more. So in those states, it's important to give even more to other people than you would normally do, because they're used to having the opposite start to happen. So, you know, those are probably a couple things that you can do pretty easily. The other thing that I do that is the most powerful social tool that you can use possible is introducing people to other people. And I do this all the time, and I even introduce strangers to strangers. And it doesn't really matter, because people want to meet other people so desperately that how you do it, or if it comes off good, or if it doesn't, no one cares. They're just interested in meeting someone else. And it's enabled me to build a lot of relationships, because when you introduce someone to someone else, you are the hub and the other two people are the spokes. So you are an extremely powerful and influential place because you're the person doing it. And again, no one introduces people to other people in general out there unless they know both people, or it's someone that you know really well doing it. So when you start extending yourself and doing things like I've just mentioned, really quickly, you can gain a lot of influence with other people and build relationships way quicker.
That's all the time we have today. Thanks for listening. If you have a minute to spare, please leave us a review on iTunes. The more reviews we get, the easier it will be for people to find us on iTunes. So if you like what we have to say, we'd appreciate a little bit of love.